content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello and welcome to the summer 2013 edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program produced by the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm your host, George Douglas. This monthly program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you would like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how you can do that later in the program. Now, this program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well, both digital and cassette. The library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. If you are not a patron yourself but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information at the end of this program as well. Now, this month, we'll take a look at the most popular books checked out during the month of May 2013, as well as a few books that were very popular in the spring generally at the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. We'll begin with a very, very popular novel around the Library for the Blind. It's called Collateral Damage. It's a Stone Barrington novel by Stuart Woods. Now, in previous Stone Barrington books, we have gotten to know Stuart Woods' protagonist quite well. However, the author has decided to change things up a little bit in Collateral Damage, the latest addition to the series. Here, Stone Barrington assumes, well, more of a supporting role rather than being the major problem solver, as we are given an in-depth introduction to other characters, too. Stone's favorite New York restaurant, Elaine's, has closed in the wake of its owner's death. Now, visiting the site opens wounds of both good and bad memories for him and his detective pal, Dino. While they reminisce, a deadly bomb takes the life of the foreign secretary in London. Strong evidence suggests a link to an incident in Los Angeles where Stone and his friend, lover, CIA operative Holly Barker, helped thwart a terrorist plot involving two brothers who were killed in the process of setting off lethal bombs, one of which had utilized nuclear material. When her boss, CIA director Catherine Rule Lee, the wife of the U.S. president, calls upon Holly to investigate, chills run up her spine. The dead brothers had a third sibling, Jasmine Shazaz, who now lives in London. Now, the Vanity Fair reporter who had witnessed the California bombs being destroyed may be actively pursuing to publicize the event. Holly must stop the story from being leaked when news of the London bombing hits. Coincidence may prevent Jasmine, if she is indeed the bomber, from being captured if this news is made public. Stone serves on a special presidential commission covering incidents like the latest attack. In a briefing with government officials, Holly and Stone learn that the deceased, Dr. Carl, a Pakistani scientist, had most probably assembled the nuclear device to be set by the Shazaz boys, considering that he alone had the knowledge to produce the weapon for them. Jasmine had been a witness and participant in her family's underground activities and is now on a mission of revenge for the deaths of her brothers. Woods develops Holly as an experienced operative given new duties and enormous responsibility to apprehend and detain or kill Jasmine. Catherine involves herself in the hunt because of the dire possibilities of any successful terrorist plot on U.S. soil. We see a human and whimsical side of the presidency in the scenes featuring her husband. Deeply dedicated in their respective jobs, these people can exhibit ordinary emotions that down-to-earth readers can certainly understand. As the book progresses, the politics in London and Washington are shown for contrast in style as well as propriety. FBI, CIA, and the British Intelligence Organization work together and share findings, but each declares portions of their own operative turf. We can only imagine that reality in today's political spectrum may operate in the same manner. Alternating chapters explore the mind of Jasmine, whose motives propel her actions. Her status is elevated within her terrorist cell due to her knowledge of the previous bombs, her intelligence, and her willingness to plan and execute the jobs with little concern for her own security. Safe houses, various identities, and locations seem manufactured a bit too easily for her. Collateral Damage is a weekend read that will keep you riveted to its climax. Stone Barrington may be the titular character of this series, but Holly Barker is the real heroine, while Dino and his girlfriend serve as minor characters. Stone's close relationship to the government officials involved, along with his intelligence, gives him a major role in the story, and his love affair with Holly leads us to anticipate more action in future Barrington thrillers with the lovely CIA operative. And again, that book is called Collateral Damage, a Stone Barrington novel by Stuart Woods, and it was one of the most popular books during the month of May at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Our next book is called A Woman Next Door by Barbara Delinsky. Three married couples live in small upscale community in Connecticut. At first, it seems their only problem lives next door in the form of a young, beautiful widow whose husband died too long ago to have fathered the child that she carries. And all three husbands, for various legitimate reasons, fit the time frame of the conception. The wives can summon little sympathy for the woman, seeing her as a usurper who married a much older man after his wife died of cancer. And that wife they loved. Each of the three husbands, in his own way, showed greater kindness to their beautiful neighbor than their respective wives. And those kindnesses give rise to suspicion and wifely doubt. But other problems simmer beneath the surface of what appears to be an idyllic lifestyle. A psychologist working with children, Amanda wants desperately to have a baby, but her age and declining fertility work against her and her husband's wishes. 40-something Georgia owns her own company, supports her stay-at-home writer husband's wish to be a house husband, but wants to be at home with her children. Karen, also in her 40s, knows her husband strays, but thinks her children need a stable home. It takes a suicide, a child in crisis, a woman in need, vandalism, misunderstanding, and some backbone, too, to bring the suspicions out in the open. But will that give each woman what she wants? I guess each reader will answer that in his or her own way. If you are looking for excitement, look elsewhere. Excitement lurks here and there, but what makes this book so interesting lies in a different direction. It delves deep, shows flaws, and does it well. Delinsky held my attention, gave me moments to ponder, and made me realize once again that if anything can go wrong in relationships, it certainly will. And once again, that book was called A Woman Next Door by Barbara Delinsky, very popular this past month. Now we'll turn to a book by James Patterson and Mark Sullivan, and it's entitled Private Berlin. Private is the world's most influential investigation firm, helmed by Jack Morgan, and with offices seemingly in every corner of the globe. It is the go-to group for the movers and shakers, whether they are individuals, countries, or corporations. In Private Berlin, by James Patterson and Mark Sullivan, Private brings all of its resources to bear when a brutal and brilliant killer focuses on one of their own. Chris Schneider rules the roost at Private Berlin. He generally goes it alone, being tasked with Private's highest profile and most important German cases. However, when he suddenly disappears without warning, the private offices and personnel become concerned, especially as it pertains to Matty Engel. Chris and Matty were colleagues on the job and lovers at home, at least until recently, when Matty broke their engagement for reasons that, well, even she cannot entirely explain. When Chris vanishes, Matty, whose feelings for the agent still flicker, throws herself into the investigation to either find him or determine his fate. She begins by investigating the three cases that Chris was handling before disappearing. Each is fascinating in its own right. One concerns a powerful and influential billionaire who is suspected of infidelity by his wife. A second involves an unbelievably talented soccer star who is thought to have been fixing games. And the third deals with a successful nightclub operator who may be in bed with a Russian mob, among others. Any of these people might have found it expedient to take Chris off the board if he discovered too much about them. What Matty finds, however, is that her former lover, who was so closed-mouthed about his past, is hiding a terrifying and deadly secret that is intimately tied with Berlin's history. Worse, she slowly discovers that Chris shared this secret and a frightening experience with several other people, all of whom are being selectively targeted and eliminated by a fiend who calls himself the Invisible Man. The narrative alternates between a third-person, omnipresent view, focusing primarily on Matty, and the chilling first-person, live-as-it-happens observations of the shadowy and dangerous antagonists of the piece, as Matty and Private find that their investigation is seemingly and inexplicably being hamstrung by a legendary Berlin police investigator with secrets of his own that he does not wish to see the light of day. Worse, Private seems to be chasing a murderer who operates in plain view and who can seemingly change appearance at will. When Engel gets too close to the Invisible Man, she finds that she has put not only herself at mortal risk, but also those whom she loves more than life itself. Patterson has always been an expert at conceiving chilling villains of his many pieces, and with Sullivan he achieves new heights of terror with the Invisible Man. And while the story proceeds at breakneck speed, there are clocks ticking all over the place, Patterson and Sullivan create plenty of scenes that readers will not soon forget. There's one in particular that, being a vignette in the opening pages of the book, about a fourth of the way in, that lovers of thriller and horror fiction will read over and over again. A rat is involved, but you'll know it when you see it. Trust me. Private Berlin will make you a fan of this wide-ranging, marvelously conceived series if you are not already one. And we know there are many who are patrons of the North Carolina Library for the Blind. That is a book called Private Berlin by James Patterson and Mark Sullivan. Now on Heard Any Good Books Lately, we'll turn to a book called Unspoken by Lisa Jackson. The envelope delivered to Shelby Cole's Seattle home contains no return address, just a photograph of a little girl. Shelby knows at once that this is the daughter she was told died at birth. And in that moment, Shelby knows something else. She needs to go back to Bad Luck, Texas. Now, she's not the only one coming home. A long-ago killing is in the news again following recanted testimony. A violent nightmare from Shelby's past has been set free, and she can't shake a suspicion that someone is baiting her, luring her back here for their own ends. Shelby's search for answers is met with stonewalling and hostility. Her only ally is a figure from her past, someone she has every reason not to trust. In the midst of dark family revelations, she uncovers a terrifying scheme of revenge, and some secrets, once spoken, can never be forgotten or forgiven. That book is called Unspoken, and it was written by Lisa Jackson. Now we'll move on to another very popular book in the last couple of months at the Library for the Blind. This one is called Sealed with a Promise by Mary Margaret Daughtridge. Like her first book, Sealed with a Kiss, the seal, and this is capitalized, S-E-A-L, as in our Navy SEAL, aspect of the story is almost peripheral. There isn't any war game going on except for the prologue, and that is relatively minor. What we see in this book is the strong friendships between the men who are in the same unit, and we see some of their camaraderie as well as their inner thoughts, especially Dew Lords, as this is his story. That's spelled, by the way, D-O-L-O-R-D, Dew Lord. The war going on is in his thoughts. Now, this story revolves around the wedding of Pickett and Jax from the first book. I'm guessing, but I don't know, that perhaps the third book revolves around the wedding that is Dew Lord's. Dew Lord has a serious ethical and moral problem. Charged with protecting, he has in his gun sights Teague Calhoun, the man he had vowed to kill when he was a teenager. He holds him responsible for his mother's death. He knows he could take him out, but it goes against all that he stands for as a SEAL. It shakes him to his core that he could endanger his unit. Dew Lord has a high IQ, which he has managed to hide most of his life, as well as almost photographic memory and the ability to, or nearly to, foresee future events when in dangerous situations. Fast forward to the actual story. Dew Lord is taking part in the wedding, as is Pickett's good friend Emma. Emma's problem is lack of confidence despite having her Ph.D. She dislocated her shoulder, saving a student, and has her arm in a sling. This provides Dew Lord the opportunity to be of service. He sees through her frumpy appearance, surprised that his libido has kicked in big time, and then he realizes that she can afford him entrance into Calhoun's life, for though she is not a relative and she dislikes him, she calls Calhoun Uncle Teague. Now, the promise comes in when Emma insists that they promise each other that if they start a relationship, they will be loyal as well as exclusive. Dew Lord asks her if she would insist marriage be a part of the deal, but she stops just short of this. What starts out as a way to get to Calhoun ends up rescuing Dew Lord and Emma and turns into true love. Along the way, Dew Lord learns a few things about himself, especially that revenge doesn't pay. He is able to find another way and gain the upper hand. Warning, there is a bit about celiac disease, which Pickett has, which forwards this story. There's also something about Falcone anemia, and there's a bit about blood draws. Surprisingly, I know someone with this disease, says the writer, which is rare. I also have known someone with celiac disease. While these are important aspects to the story, they do not overwhelm it, and the reviewer gives this a 5 out of 5 and says the love story is believable and the friendships and the family loyalty are very, very likable. It was a popular book during the month of May among the patrons of the North Carolina Library for the Blind, and you might enjoy it too. It's called Sealed with a Promise by Mary Margaret Daughtridge, and it's a follow-up to her first book that was called Sealed with a Kiss. now on to the next book from the popular list of books for the month of May. This one is entitled Women on Top: How Real Life Has Changed Women's Sexual Fantasies by Nancy Friday. Nancy Friday's phenomenal bestsellers, My Secret Garden and Forbidden Flowers, broke new ground, revealing for the first time the complexity of women's secret sexual fantasies. In this new book, Women on Top, she returns to the subject that made her famous, examining the erotic fantasy lives of more than 150 modern women. Drawn from Friday's personal interviews and letters, Women on Top contains transcripts of real sexual fantasies that will change your mindset about women and sex. A revolutionary exploration of female eroticism, Women on Top reveals the powerful and astounding sexual attitudes that are forever changing our intimate lives. One of the most popular books during the past couple of months, Women on Top: How Real Life Has Changed Women's Sexual Fantasies by Nancy Friday. And our next book on Heard Any Good Books Lately is called Charlie's Web by Joy Fielding. New York Times best-selling and award-winning author Joy Fielding tells the story of an ambitious journalist whose foray into the mind of a killer puts her own family in jeopardy. Charlie Webb is a beautiful single mother who writes a successful and controversial column for the Palm Beach Post. She spent years building an emotional wall against scathing critics, snooty neighbors, and her disapproving family. But when she receives a letter from Jill Romer, a young woman serving time on death row for the murders of three small children, her boundaries slowly begin to fade. Jill wants Charlie to write her biography, so that she can share the many hidden truths about the case that failed to surface during her trial. Seeing this as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, Charlie begins her journey into the mind of this deeply troubled woman. Her path takes a twisted turn, however, when the anonymous letters she's recently received from an angry reader evolve into threats, targeting her son and daughter. As Charlie races against time to save her family, she begins to understand the value of her seemingly intrusive neighbors, friends, and relatives, as she discovers this network of flawed but loving people might just be her only hope of getting out alive. Filled with complex characters and a plot rich with intrigue, Charlie's Web is Joy Fielding at her heart-skipping, mesmerizing best. And once again, that book is called Charlie's Web by Joy Fielding. Now, another book by James Patterson, this time with Maxine Petro. This one is called The 11th Hour. The 11th Hour by James Patterson and Maxine Petro may be the best women's murder club novel to date. The four longtime friends, Lindsay Boxer, a San Francisco homicide investigator, Dr. Claire Washburn, an SFPD medical examiner, Cindy Thomas, a newspaper reporter, and prosecuting attorney Yuki Castellano, bring their different overlapping and occasionally conflicting disciplines together to solve crimes. The result is part police procedural, part detective, part murder mystery, and yes, part romance, too. So what makes The 11th Hour my favorite book in the series, asked the reviewer. Well, it would have to be the mystery elements. The book begins with a cold-blooded killing at a school during a music recital. The killer, who is known as Revenge, has been targeting drug dealers throughout San Francisco, seemingly killing with impunity. Boxer, who with husband Joe Molinari is pregnant with her first child and is experiencing the ups and downs of prenatal motherhood when she is assigned to the case. The revenge killings are barely on Boxer's radar before she and partner Rich Conklin answer a 9/11 call. A horrifying tableau awaits them. two heads have been arranged in the garden of a house belonging to one of San Francisco's most famous residents. Boxer's boss wants her working full-time on the revenge murders for two very important reasons. He suspects that the murderer is a cop, and revenge's latest victim is a cop, too, working undercover in the drug trade. But Boxer doesn't want to let go of the head case, and when more heads turn up in the garden, a forensic investigation, courtesy of Dr. Washburn, indicates that the decapitation and burial have been occurring for quite a while. Thus, Boxer has two very different and very separate cases, both of which are totally unrelated. She acquires quite a list of suspects in the revenge murders, and one of the names on the list is her former partner's. As far as the buried head case is concerned, Boxer and Conklin use good old-fashioned police work, including knocking on and down doors, literally, to get the answers they need. By the time the book ends, they found a very insane murderer, and one who, when all things are considered, is quite sympathetic. None of this sounds very romantic, does it? If you're looking for romance, The 11th Hour has that as well. Castellano is dating Boxer's boss, and Thomas is seeing Boxer's partner. And Boxer's husband, well, let's just say that he gets in the biggest trouble that a husband can get into. Oh, and one more thing. You never know with a Women's Murder Club book if everyone is going to make it to the end intact. People get hurt in this one, though it's nothing to lose your head over. That was reviewed last year, 2012, by Joe Hartlaub. The 11th Hour by James Patterson and Maxine Petro. As you know, Heard Any Good Book Lately is all about the books at the North Carolina Library for the blind and visually handicapped, and I was on the website just the other day, which is a very valuable place to go for information about books for the blind, digital and large print books and so forth. I found an interesting item that I wanted to share with you. It's called The Resource of the Week. It was just posted in early June, and it says, "Moviegoers rejoice. If you are blind, visual, or hearing impaired, you'll find CaptionFish.com to be a favorite place to visit to find out what's playing and showtimes of movie theaters that have descriptive narration, and it has closed captioning as well. Obviously, we're more interested in descriptive narration. But best of all, you can find the movie theaters that are close to home. And I looked at it, and it included in Raleigh movie theaters at Regal North Hills, Carmike 15 on Atlantic Springs Road, Carmike Park Place in Chapel Hill, too. One in Apex, Regal Beaver Creek, Regal Briar Creek, and so forth. Check that out. It's called CaptionFish.com, and find out where descriptive audio is given on all the popular movies. And that's all the time we have for Heard Any Good Books Lately for this month. I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like more information on how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind or to join the Friends Group, call 1-888-388-2460. This program is intended for a print and visually handicapped audience. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long, until next time.